Okay, we are going to start, call the meeting to order, 3 o'clock. And I'd like to thank everybody for coming to this special meeting that we set up. And let's do a roll call. Taylor?
Here.
Hardy?
Here.
Beanstalk?
Absent.
Berg?
Here.
McLean?
Here.
Harmon?
Here.
Morrow?
Here.
Denard?
Here.
Goodman?
Here.
Hero?
Here.
And Dr. Seaman is absent.
Okay, thank you. We'll move to agenda item number 2, a call to the public. Anybody that would like to speak?
Madam President, my name is Ryan Edmondson, the executive director. So the governor's office wanted to be heard during the call to the public, so they issued just a written statement. It's one paragraph that they wanted to be read into the record.
Okay.
If I may. Dear members of the Arizona Board of Dental Examiners, I write today on behalf of the citizens of Arizona as you hold a board meeting to consider the licensing of Dr. Goyle. As members of the Arizona Board of Dental Examiners, it is your responsibility to protect Arizonans from people who may deceive them in the practice of dentistry. Dr. Goyle has demonstrated through his actions and subsequent plea agreement to 3 felonies in a criminal case that there are questions whether patients can rely on his integrity as their health care provider. Today, I urge you to take emergency action to protect any potential unsuspecting patients and move forward with the summary suspension of his dental license. Emily Rajakovich, Directors of Boards and Commissions, Office of Arizona Governor Ducey.
Thank you. Okay, and we'll move on to agenda item number 3, public comment on cases. I do not have anybody signed in other than some attorneys. So. Okay, that's the fastest we've ever moved through that one, public comment on cases. We'll go to agenda item number 4, declaration of conflicts of interest. Does anybody have anything that they need to declare or recuse? Okay, agenda item number 5, review, discussion, and possible action on board meeting minutes. The last board meeting in June, we had to table this due to lack of a quorum. I believe we may fall under that same category today.
You do.
Okay. So we're going to table this till the August meeting. Agenda item number 6, items for board review, discussion, possible action. So first we have letter A was removed. I believe everybody has gotten that email.
Excuse me.
Yes. No, yeah, you'll
the
still need
to. The request for removal was made, but it's our decision to still consider the application. We decide whether it was removed and whether it gets accepted, denied.
Right, you can just vote on whether to accept his request to withdraw the application.
Okay. Would anybody like to make a motion?
I move that we deny the application. Deny the request and consider the application that was made by the dentist.
Anybody have a second?
Taylor, second.
Any discussion?
Can you go over the pros and cons?
Do they have information?
Yeah. So you have essentially 3 options: 1, to approve the application; 2, to deny; 3, to accept the request to withdraw. Approving, obviously, is self-explanatory, and denial comes with reporting to the National Practitioner Data Bank and stuff like that.
Well, and if you were to deny, you're going to need to state a specific reason on the record as to why Dr. Goyle doesn't qualify for a restricted permit.
And I believe, if I understand correctly, that you're not saying that you wish to deny. You're wishing to deny his withdrawing the application. You would like to consider the application.
I believe the application was made and that we should consider it and not withdraw it, yes.
Okay. So we do not need a motion to deny the withdrawal.
Yes, so you don't want to. The motion is to not allow Dr. Goyle to withdraw the restricted permit application.
If a motion's needed, yes.
Yes.
Is to keep it on the agenda.
Okay.
Okay. Any discussion on that?
Yeah, if you go to page 15 on the computer, first of all, the healthcare provider for the CPR, the dates are wrong. It says recommended renewal date. It has 2/28/22. There's no such thing.
So, and also, when you look at, and I would have to find this, and I'm sure Mary could point me in the right direction, but when you look at a restricted permit, we're looking at somebody who does not already hold an active license when they come in, and right now Dr. Goyle holds an active license. So it's not technically something that somebody would actually hold both of them. And in doing so, per statute, it says that it is needed that they have an offer from a charity, which at first happened that they had it, but then there was a withdrawal from that offer. So I don't think that there would be any way that it would be that we would approve him to have a restricted permit, which would meeting legislation, not by our own doing, but because he doesn't meet the legislative code to have it, which would mean that we would have to deny it at that point, which then would be reported. So I assume that was why they had chosen instead to withdraw it with that.
In all respect, correct. We need to weigh the application that was made on its merits, and without a place to do the voluntary work, that was withdrawn after his first day of attempting to do the work. That's material to what we're dealing with and the individual.
Okay.
Good moral character is core to licensing. And we have, in Dr. Taylor pointed out, we have someone who didn't fill out the CPR info right or didn't submit correct info from what it looks. We have other issues, so at this point I think we should choose whether or not he is eligible for the restricted permit.
Okay. I see Ms. McClellan approaching.
I have signed in.
Yes, you have
matter,
to speak.
So
yes, she is
like
signed in.
To speak.
Yes, you may.
I will take you back to November 1st, 2018, because there was a board meeting held. I think many of you maybe were not board members at that time, but there was a board meeting held which resulted in the stay of the board cases and an agreement that Dr. Goyle would voluntarily not practice general dentistry during that period of time until the criminal case was decided. We specifically ask for that to be done. In that same meeting, and in my request for that, we also ask if Dr. Goyle could apply for the restricted permit, and that is set forth in an agreement between the board and Dr. Goyle. And the board members at that time said that he could apply for a restricted permit. Through discussions, I think this comes down to, as far as his general dental license, comes down to a yes or no decision. And we requested to withdraw that application. You, the board, has done that on many occasions for many other dentists. In fact, the board usually goes out of its way to explain to a dentist if they're going to deny something, they have a right to request the withdrawal of that application. And I would ask that you treat this, just and treat Dr. Goyle like you do treat all other dentists, to do that. The email from Dr. Volchek, which is very generic in a way because he does not give specifics of any dates of when he met with Dr. Goyle. He does not say specifically what the determination was made that they withdrew their contract, if you want to call it that, with Dr. Goyle, that he could, that he wasn't going to work there or volunteer there. So we don't know what those circumstances were. And Dr. Goyle is here with me, and he can explain to you that basically, what Brighter Way wanted was that Dr. Goyle needed to be able to practice 3 days a week there at the clinic volunteer his time 3 days a week because they have such a demand, or there really wasn't going to be a useful need for him there at the clinic. And so that's the basis of withdrawing. Because he doesn't have a contract now, he does not meet those statutory requirements, and we recognize that, and that's why we withdrew the application. And I would ask that you consider that in your discussion of there is no need to be punishing Dr. Goyle for something that the other party to the contract made a decision not to utilize him because he couldn't fulfill the 3 days a week of work.
To clarify, he could have sought out another opportunity to meet the requirements of the permit that he has applied for.
That is exactly right, and I believe he has tried to do that. It's been very difficult for him to do that. He wants to try and volunteer. He wants to try and use his general dental skills to benefit the underprivileged at these organizations. And many of the organizations will not even do an interview with him. So I agree with you. He could, and he has done that. And unfortunately, he has not been successful. But once he was successful with Brighter Way, that's when we made the application.
Is it his intent to do 750 hours of community service as a dentist?
No. Some of those may if he has his general dental license. But he has already been doing a significant number of hours of volunteer work in the community that is not dental practice.
So this is Dr. Taylor. Mm-hmm. How many times did he work down at Brightway?
He has never worked at Brightway.
So he didn't even went 1 day. He went down there.
It's my understanding he went 3 times.
Right.
One time he did meet with Dr. Volchek.
Right.
And 2 times he did observe with 2 different volunteer dentists on how the procedure works.
Right. And
but
they,
it was observation.
And then they declined after that.
Correct.
Right. But if you look on it, again, this is Dr. Taylor. If you look on his CPR, he hasn't signed the CPR, and the date isn't correct. And while this was supposed to be done by June the 30th, right, of this year?
I believe he has a current CPR card, if that's your concern. I don't have that.
I have the card right here in front of me. It's part of the licensing, and it's not complete.
It's current in its dates. It's not signed.
Okay.
Well, the date's not right either.
It's missing.
Yeah, it's missing a zero. It should be 2020, I'm assuming, 2021. Yeah. It's 2020.
Is that a typewritten date in there?
It's typed in there. So
okay. Well, that may be published that way on the card. That may not be Dr. Goyle's doing. I don't know. But I think you have to take that into consideration that, okay, he needs to sign the card, but I think the other information
on the
card. I know, but the other information on the card would have come from whoever published the card.
Not Dr. Goyle.
This is Dinar. I kind of wanted to make a comment before we kind of go too much into the weeds. Since the application for a restricted permit was withdrawn, we really don't have any application before us. So for agenda item 6A, all we have is basically nothing. So I mean, what sort of action do we take on an application that does not exist? I don't believe we need any kind of motion to accept or deny the withdrawal of the application.
This is Goodman. That's the point. The decision to allow the withdrawal of the application is the board's, not the applicant's. So the application is there until we agree that it's not.
Yeah. Ms. Hardy, can
yes.
I just raise an issue that maybe will expedite this? And Sherry?
Yes.
Is this even a complete application?
No, it is not complete.
Yeah, it's what I was saying.
So I don't know that it should even get to the board then at this point. If it's not administratively complete, it hasn't...
Then you can't withdraw.
Hasn't gotten through the door yet, so to speak.
Then you can't withdraw it if it hasn't been submitted.
Well, I think you may have asked them for additional information.
I did. I did send a deficiency letter letting Dr. Goyle know what was still outstanding for a completed application.
And when was that?
I don't have it in front of me.
Is the time up?
Do you have
June 3rd,
2019. His restricted file?
So we're saying that we don't have all the documentation. It wasn't turned in properly by the dentist, and that therefore it shouldn't be on our agenda.
Right. So what would happen under your process is once a deficiency notice goes out, the applicant has 60 days to submit all of the missing information. If that doesn't happen, then the application is just deemed withdrawn automatically. It doesn't come to you. So if it's, depending on when the letter was sent, I think June?
June 3rd
is 60 days. So is it 60?
No.
August.
August the 3rd.
Would be August 2nd.
So technically, his time hasn't even run yet to give you any missing information. If Dr. Goyle chooses not to pursue it any longer, it's going to get withdrawn
just
automatically on its own terms.
So this,
it'll just kind of fail.
So that's a moot point.
So this is something that there's not even a vote that we
really
can do on this
yes.
because it's not an application that's
so after
complete.
All that.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, everybody.
That's what I was wondering.
If Mr. Goodman and Dr. Taylor can withdraw their motions, then you can move on to the
Dr.
next
Taylor
item.
Withdraws his second.
So does Mr. Goodman.
Okay. Moving on to letter B.
Thank you, Susan.
Okay, and
I'm here for B also, so I'm just
So before we... I'm going to go out of order for a little bit. On letter B, I would like to first start with number 3 to get this out of the way for the possibility of hiring outside counsel to represent the board in cases number 2014-00099 and 2017-00101. Ryan, is there anything that you want to say to this or... Is there any reason, after we've had some of the communication with our legal advice, we have the option as a board to hiring outside counsel. At that point, if we chose to do that, our counsel would step back. We would have to delay the proceedings of today because we would have to get new counsel, which we would have to pay for from the board. And it would be the AG's office that would then appoint somebody to be our new counsel. They would then be updated with the information, and then we would reconvene to finish this matter. So with what, am I correct in saying that? That is all correct?
You're absolutely right, Madam President.
Okay. So is there anybody with any legal advice that we have had? Do you wish for anything that wasn't given to us? That's basically what this would provide. If there's any questions that you feel have gone unanswered, if there's any options that you feel weren't covered adequately, that you don't feel that Mary could provide us.
I think that it's our legal representation's responsibility to help us defend the public interest, and I have personal concerns, yes. I think that having another legal opinion on this matter could be of help. Goodman.
This is Dinar. Regarding point 3, I kind of had similar thoughts to what Mr. Goodman expressed. The only reason why I would want outside counsel here is because of from among the staff members at the board, it's really only Ms. Williams who has actual information going back to 2014. So I worry that we would, unwittingly put her in the position of both litigating this matter as well as being a witness, a factual witness in the matter. So, I mean, for that reason, I would strongly suggest that we look at outside counsel just because we want that kind of factual development during the further proceedings in this matter.
Any motions?
This is good.
I mean, before I do want to make a motion, but before I make the motion, I just wanted to clarify that the decision to hire outside counsel does not affect any items on today's agenda. So, I mean, we don't really have to, you know, postpone any of the agenda items on today's meeting if we make that decision today.
If we make
or
that
decision.
If we make that decision today, though, it will be to represent this case, and it will delay today's proceedings. So that will just be what happens with it. I hear what you both are saying, and I can understand both sides to it. I can understand that there has been Ms. Williams, who has been present from the beginning, and I definitely don't want her to be put in a position like Mr. Dinar had said. I do feel, though, that she, when she gave us the legal advice, that she gave us all options, because she's not here to make our opinion for us. She's here to point us in the legal options that we have. So I don't think that we all had our legal email that was sent to us regarding just different options that was given to us, and I felt that they were covered.
Yeah, and I don't question her integrity. I don't question her ability. I think that it could be of value to the board to have outside counsel.
So to that point, Dr. Hardy, I think what I was getting at is if we decide to have outside counsel, that doesn't prevent Ms. Williams from being the board's counsel for the purposes of this meeting. Because the motion, the way I see it, the outside counsel would be representing the board only if any of the matters on today's agenda go to the Office of Administrative Hearings or go to the state court. So the outside counsel will only, the scope of representation would only be for OAH proceedings and state court proceedings and not encompass any board meeting, which today's meeting is a board meeting. So that's what my thinking was on hiring outside counsel.
Okay, we'll let Mr. Teller.
I was going to suggest you go into executive session for purposes of receiving legal advice on this question.
Okay.
Taylor moves that we go into executive session.
Harley seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Any opposed? And before we all get up, because...
Ryan took care of it. There's
took care
phone
of it
service
we have,
in there. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Since we have calls, we didn't know if we were going to be able to receive our callers in our executive session, but we are, so we can go in executive session. Ms. McLean, Mr. Dinar, thank you.
Yes, I'm here.
Ms. McLean?
It said two of the callers.
It did. I wonder if she's muted. Okay, well, we are going back into open session. Oh.
Hey, I think I just got disconnected, so I'm back. It's Marilyn.
Okay, perfect. We are just going back into open session, Ms. McLean. So we are going to actually table agenda item number 3, and we're going to go back to agenda item number 1 under 6B. So results of the investigation in case numbers 2014-00099. And 2017-00101.
Ms. Hardy?
Yes.
For right now, you have a stay in place under that interim order. Do you want to take number 4 first? Because in order to move forward,
but the investigation,
the case is stayed right now.
Okay. So then, again, we are going to change our agenda. So then that would be tabling number 1 and now going to number 4. So, whether to lift the interim order staying the case for cases number 2014-00099 and 2017-00101, an interim voluntary agreement not to practice.
So you need a motion to lift that?
Taylor moves that we lift the motion or interim order staying cases number 201-400099 and 201-700101.
And
interim voluntary agreement not to practice.
Mara seconds.
Okay. Any discussion? We have a motion and a second. Do we need a roll call?
You may want to, just since we have people on the phone.
Okay. We'll do a roll call.
Taylor?
Yes.
Hardy?
Aye.
Berg?
Here.
McLean?
Yes.
Harmon?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Dinar?
Yes.
Goodman?
Yes.
Hero?
Yes.
Okay, all in favor? Motion passed. Okay, back to number one. So results of the investigation. Cases number 201400099 and 201700101. Dr. Goyle. Okay, as I'm looking at this agenda again, sorry, you guys, jumping around the agenda so much. I feel that it's relevant, actually, for number two to be talked about first for adding that, because it's relevant to the investigation in the case. So I apologize again that we're going to skip back in table one and go to number two, staff recommendation to add an additional allegation in the cases number 2014-00099 and 2017-00101 based on the felony convictions in criminal case number CR-2018.
Yeah, Taylor moves that we add the felony conviction.
Goodman, second.
Yeah, if I could do a brief address to the board on the remaining issues that are here, and Dr. Goyle has a brief statement also. It applies to both one and two, and
Perfect.
Basically
yeah,
probably
you can kind of
three
take them,
also.
You yeah, can take can them at
talk
the same
them
time.
Together.
They're
okay,
related.
Good.
And
They're
then you all can talk about what you need to talk
okay.
about.
But the move
Would
the second
okay?
stands, correct?
You can leave it.
Okay.
For the record, I'm Susan McClellan. I'm counsel for Dr. Goyle. Dr. Goyle is here to my left. He would like to make a very brief statement, and then I will follow with maybe a little bit longer statement, but I'll try and keep it short.
Thank you, everyone. I am Pankaj Goyle. I do want to apologize to this board for betraying the trust and confidence of the dental profession and the dental board. I am truly sorry and regret how it has reflected to this board and my family. It is difficult for me to express the full extent of my shame for my conduct. While there is no excuse for what I did, I am asking that you allow me the opportunity to explain my conduct in an interview with you, the dental board members. Thank you.
I, too, want to apologize to the board for the position you find yourself in. I know you've been under great scrutiny by the media. You have also been receiving significant pressure from the governor's office for a period of time on this matter. And I do apologize for that. But I think it's important, since we are all professionals here, that we put our personal feelings aside and we try to view this reasonably with logical minds and not succumb to pressures and scrutiny. With that, I have three requests to make to the board that you consider in your deliberations today. I understand this is not a meeting to give testimony, but for you all to decide what steps you're going to take next in the case. So I would ask that you consider the following three items. Actually, the first item, you've already lifted the stay. And we would like that to continue so that Dr. Goyle can go back to practicing general dentistry. This was never an issue about his general dental practice. The board did not have any concern about him practicing general dentistry. And we voluntarily gave that up on a temporary basis because you all allowed the case to be stayed while the criminal case proceeded ahead. And that was the intent for having any stay on the case. And that was the purpose of Dr. Goyle voluntarily agreeing to not practice general dentistry was for the purpose of allowing the criminal case to reach its determination. And that's been done. Dr. Goyle's been a general dentist in Arizona since 2006, and he practiced in Ohio even prior to that. He has a good record here in Arizona. I believe he has one prior consent agreement with the board from treatment that was performed in 2011 on an implant case. Other than that, there have been no problems with his general dentistry practice, and he is not a danger or a harm to the public of Arizona. He is a safe practitioner. The second item is we would like to try and negotiate a resolution to these two cases. We can all spend a significant amount of time on attorneys or hiring outside attorneys, but if we can negotiate something, we get to a final resolution much quicker and with certainty for both sides. And I tried to make a first attempt at that by submitting a resolution package to the board on May 13th, 2019. I think you all have been given those materials. I don't know if you've had a chance to really review them, but I think this is a reasonable request to try to negotiate something. And again, it shortens up the time period everybody will need to spend on this, and it will also save all parties financially in that respect. I don't see that there's any downside in at least trying to do that. And if that fails, then my third request that I would ask that you consider is that you allow a formal interview so that Dr. Goyle can speak directly to you to provide insight into his side of this incident. And you will have the opportunity to then ask him questions about it. This has been going along. There's been a lot of paperwork going back and forth for a long period of time. But during that time, no one has heard directly from Dr. Goyle. And we would like that opportunity if we cannot reach a resolution with you all. So the issues are that Dr. Goyle should be able to perform general dentistry while this case continues on. I would ask that you consider if we can discuss resolution. And then third, if not, do a formal interview with the board so that you all have a better understanding of the details of this case. One of the other items that you alluded to on the agenda is adding an additional allegation based on the felony conviction in the criminal case. And I just want to clarify that the conviction is for an undesignated felony. I'm not a criminal attorney. I did not represent Dr. Goyle in the criminal matter. His criminal attorney is here and can answer your questions about this, but it is my understanding an undesignated felony is neither a felony nor a misdemeanor, but it allows the person the time that the end of that case or the finality of the case turns into or becomes a misdemeanor. So I think to call this a felony conviction is maybe a misnomer. And I personally do not have enough detailed information on criminal to be able to talk to you about that. But Mr. Mitchell is here if you do have questions. So I just raise that as an aside because of that issue of the way it's worded in the agenda item. Again, we're asking for an opportunity to show you that Dr. Goyle is deserving of a second chance. And we would ask that you keep an open mind to that and allow us either to negotiate or to have a hearing to resolve this. most importantly, his general dentistry practice is not the issue here. He has been a safe practitioner, and he should be allowed to continue that until these cases are decided. Dr. Goyle needs to be able and has a right to be able to earn a living for his family and work to regain their respect back in that manner. So I thank you for your time and your consideration on these cases.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. This is Dr. Can I say something?
Of course.
This is Dr. Taylor. Can I ask you a question? There is three felonies, fraud and forgery. They are regarded as class six felonies, right?
Yes.
I mean, they may be diminished down to misdemeanors later on, but they're felonies, and that's what he's here before us is felonies.
Yes. Right now, there are felony convictions if Dr. Goyle complies and satisfies all the terms of his sentencing and probation. They can be reduced to misdemeanors. Under the board's statutes, you can discipline for a felony conviction or a misdemeanor involving moral turpitude.
Right.
These types of convictions are crimes of moral turpitude because they reflect on honesty and integrity. So even if they were to get redesignated as a misdemeanor, there's still something the board would have authority to discipline for.
Okay, and
but
right now
you can look at them as a felony.
Right, and my thought is that, this is Dr. Taylor again, anyone who applies for a license in Arizona, it basically states that you are morally right or you have moral character standing. And in this case, he's already been convicted, showing that he doesn't have those moral standings. Correct?
Well, that would be for the board to determine.
Okay, to the board.
But the statute you're dealing with is either felony or misdemeanors involving moral turpitude.
Right.
Which is different language from the requirement for good moral character.
Okay.
So right now the board
all right,
just
that's what
needs
I want to know.
To decide if you want to add that allegation. So that would become part of the both cases.
And good moral character as defined by a reasonable person standard, or is there scripture and verse for us to read on what good moral character is?
Your statutes and rules do not define it.
Thank you. I have a question for staff, if I may.
Yes.
So Dr. Goyle, in my understanding, does not currently have a license as it expired on June 30th, 2019. He's applied, in my understanding, for renewal of that license. Do we in our packet, I have not seen it, maybe I missed it, do we have a copy of the current renewal application, and if so, what page?
So, great questions. One is the renewal application is not in this packet. This board will see that in the future, too, based on the answer to the question of the felony conviction. We did receive it. It is a complete package. The renewal is in order. And to the former question, the very first one, in fact, he does have currently a license to practice. It was until you guys voted to lift the voluntary agreement. Just that he wasn't practicing. Now it's now active. He can practice, and he can practice until basically we process as staff process the renewal. So there's an expiration date of June 30th, 2019. And when I say until we process it, we'll complete our administrative review. But because of the answer that he will have had to have provided, and he did, according to Sherry Biggs, he answered yes to that question. You guys would be the substantive review to look at the application to determine whether or not to grant the renewal.
And how soon could that meeting happen? We can't review that renewal application today, from my understanding, because we need to publish the meeting. But could we call for a meeting 3 days from now and review that renewal?
This would be somewhere where Mary would jump in probably as well, but we have to have a 24-hour notice, so as long as we could get a quorum of members within, I'll use your example, 3 days, we could have a meeting in 3 days to review the application.
Thank you.
And this is Dr. Taylor again. Susan, if I'm correct, didn't we several years ago have a formal interview?
Not on these cases, no.
Okay, not all the cases, but of the 1301 permit, correct?
No.
No, okay.
There's never been a hearing because the 2014 case was ED terminated. The 2017 case was ED terminated. So when this was raised, the board, I believe it was in 2018, moved to reopen those two cases because the board had never seen them. And so to me, if you've never seen them, I would think you would want to go through those steps so that you have all the information before decisions are made. Okay. That's my opinion.
Thank you.
Mayor, President, question for legal. If somebody were, anyone, were denied renewal, what's their appeal and what's the process during that appeal? May they practice? What happens?
Do you think?
I think, yeah.
That's not mine.
Because Dr. Goyle's renewal application is not, this isn't even a topic on the agenda.
Then we can't discuss.
We can't really go any further with it.
We can't, in generalities, even know if board members
that issue's not on before you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So this is Morrow. There's a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. The reason why we came up with the stay and let him do the volunteer work is because the facts were not in, and no decision had been made on the criminal side yet. The whole reason why we did not suspend it at that point was because we didn't have all the information. We now have criminal convictions. We now have all the information. We should be able to move forward to be able to use those facts that were determined in that case and that criminal conviction to be able to help us determine our next step. And I think that's all that we really need to worry about at this point is to be able to, we've taken the stay off, we've lifted the stay, and to be able to determine what the next steps are. I think it's pretty cut and dry.
Yes. This is Dr. Harmon. To that point, when we did make that decision to allow him to be able to practice, that was with the information that we had, as Dr. Morrow just stated. What this information was Dr. Goyle's testament to us that his information was true and valid. We didn't have any reason to doubt him at the time. Subsequently, he has submitted and passed a polygraph test stating that all that information was true. The bottom line is there are egregious violations of ethical standards that were made to the board over years and years of having opportunity to fess up to them and also to the public. Each of these patients of the Arizona public was treated by a sedation dentist that wasn't legally having a permit to do such procedures. That was the basis of that decision at the time.
I agree. And I would like to add additional allegations to both of the cases based on the felony convictions because of the criminal proceedings that have since been adjudicated. And with that, I agree that that was also, we didn't have all the facts that are now presented to us, that we do have them now. So I think it's very relevant to both the cases. I understand what Ms. McCullen is saying, that the charges may change to a misdemeanor, but right now they are designated as felonies. And we don't know what's going to happen during the time. So this is all we can go off of. And even after the fact, like you said, it would be the moral turpitude. So we would
and
have
you could
that.
Add the allegations just based on the conviction.
Right, just based on the conviction of it.
Sounds
right.
So you have a motion and a second on that.
Yes,
you make a motion?
Yes, there was a motion and a second. Yes, thank you. I had forgotten that we already had that on the table. Okay, so do we want any more discussion before we vote on this motion?
Can you repeat the motion one more time?
That is to add the felony conviction and criminal case number CR2018134514-001. This is Dr. Taylor.
And a second to that.
Okay, we have a motion, a second. Any more discussion? Let's again do a...
One,
yes.
That was I understand that was one case, but is that for all three convictions? Or is that just for
one conviction? No, that's for all three convictions, the fraud and the two forgeries.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, let's have a roll call, please, again.
Taylor?
Yes.
Hardy?
Aye.
Berg?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Harmon?
Aye.
Morrow?
Yes.
Dinar?
Yes.
Goodman?
Yes.
Hero?
Yes.
Okay, all in favor? Motion carries. Okay, so now let's go back and discuss in more detail number one, even though we've already touched on it. So the results of the investigation with the new added allegations based on the criminal conviction.
This is Goodman. Dr. Goyle received a license from the state of Arizona to practice dentistry, with the first part of the license saying he's of good moral character. Given that and all those that have been deceived by him since, it would be hard for us to reasonably say that he was of good moral character when he originally received the license and it was wrongfully given, would be my take on it.
This is Morrow. The other thing that we have to remember is our whole job as the dental board is for public safety.
Yes.
We had the opportunity in front of us to be able to determine and make our public more safe. We have standards that are set that are reasonable that other people go through on a regular basis to be able to get these licenses and to be able to have them defrauded, have the license being able to bypass our system, put our public in safety for financial gain is unprofessional conduct. That's my concern, is that we've had a whole series of people since 2006 being treated by someone who did not have the qualifications to treat. And that is our number one job here, is to make sure our public is safe.
I agree. I think there's no question that unprofessional conduct has been reached in this case. When I went through, I listed almost so many that I don't want to say them out loud, but the ones that follow through are the ARS 32-1201.016, which is obtaining a license by fraud, and then the 32-1201.012 also relates to that as well, and those are the main ones. And whenever there's unprofessional conduct, then we, at that point, there is discipline that gets put in place. When I looked at this, and I agree with Ms. McClellan that this has been something that has been highlighted through the media and through the governor's office as well. So taking both things aside and thinking over this over the past few weeks and knowing this was coming over the past month, I tried to look at it and step out of the situation and think of myself as a dental hygienist and how I am dictated by the laws and my scope of practice and what I can do. And if it is equatable that if I were practicing dentistry, because I have been doing this for 24 years, dental assistant and hygiene, that I think I could prep a filling and I think I could fill it. And I bet I could do a pretty darn good job at it. And I could take a lot of classes that could support me learning to do that. If I were to do that and fall outside of the boundaries of the law, then I would need to be disciplined. And not just on practicing dentistry part if I were to obtain that license fraudulently, but also on my hygiene license, because at that point, it is a risk to the public that I am practicing. So I do agree with what you said as well. And I think that there is discipline that needs to be put in place.
And Goodman again, and protection of the public interest and safety.
That's the main reason.
If we're a licensing board that allows for dentists to wrongfully receive their license, then what are we saying to anybody who chooses to apply in the future?
Or even to the public. This is Dr. Taylor.
And I have concerns with that, I agree with you.
Well, thank you.
I have concerns with Dr. Goyle from actually his own personal statement that he gave after the conviction to us in the letter with some of his wording. And I know that he was trying to explain his thought process when he was going through the series of events. But we only have to go off of his history because that's what has been shown to us for a long time. That's been in standing. So by his own admission, he rationalized that I had all the training that I needed, and the board's approval was just a formality. To me, that shows that he is somebody that's not regulatable. Our approval as a board, as a regulatory board, when we are there to protect the public and uphold the laws that are put in place to govern any of our licenses, they didn't matter. And I know that he's looking at that in hindsight, but all we have to go off of is the hindsight. When he completed the one-year post-grad, and he was frustrated because he couldn't get the training records, so then again, he rationalized. So showing what lengths that he wanted to go to be able to obtain that fraudulently. The opportunity then came up that he could work at Dr. Stoker's anesthesiology group, and it was something that he, quote, desperately wanted. So again, he made the fake Case Western license or
certificate
credential, right, at that point. So I think those things show the links that he was willing to go to obtain everything fraudulently and disregard us. And also the fact that it bothered me in his letter that he still feels that he has all the credentials to practice anesthesia. And I know that there hasn't been any cases against him dental-wise for his dental license, nor when he had the sedation permit, regardless of the fact that it was fraudulently obtained. But the fact of the matter is, it is stated in our legislation that there is a 3-year residency. And from everything that I looked at, from what he had said, there was not 3 years of education that was done. Yes.
There is also a contingency for military training in the statute.
Yes.
So that's where that comes from,
where
from the training
that.
In the military.
Right. So that was a...
In the statement that he created these certificates is not correct.
You mean
this
not...
This is Ms. McClain, and I agree that I don't care how much education he had, he did not have a license.
No, he it was not...
That's bottom line.
Well, he had a license, but it was obtained fraudulently. So he did not have...
Exactly.
He did not have what it stated.
Right.
And a permit. Right. You're talking about the anesthesia permit.
Right, the anesthesia permit, which, yes.
Yes. Have a dental permit. License.
Yes. Right. Yes, his dental license was obtained legally.
Sure, right. But he did not have an anesthesia license that was obtained legally. So it doesn't matter how much education he had.
Yes.
It was fraud, and we have to act upon this.
This is Dr. Hero. I think we should address, and we are, the claim that the danger was posed by Dr. Goyle holding the 1301 permit, and that's been addressed now that that's been removed. But this is not just a clinical question regarding his dental license. It's an ethical question. And regardless of the fact that there no longer exists a 1301 permit that was fraudulently obtained by Dr. Goyle, and despite the fact that we can't say there was a past clinical concern with his general dental license, there's ethical concerns. And I think that's kind of at the heart of what we're talking about right now.
This is Dinar. I kind of wanted to make two quick points. I agree with everything that has been said so far. And it's really concerning that that Dr. Goyle would, commit this fraud on the board repeatedly from 2014 onwards. I mean, he has been given a lot of opportunities to clear the record over the years, and he still maintains his lie. And it's not just unprofessional conduct, it's also unethical conduct, and that's a separate allegation or a separate factor that we have to look at as a board, which is mentioned in our legislation. And the mere fact that there is a conviction, a criminal conviction based on a plea agreement, gives us the facts necessary to take disciplinary action against Dr. Goyle, because that conviction shows that the minimum facts necessary to convict someone were admitted beyond reasonable doubt. I mean, that's a very high standard which the criminal conviction establishes. So anything less than that, clear and convincing evidence, preponderance of the evidence, are standards that will automatically be met based on the facts from the criminal case. I agree with all the sentiments that have been mentioned, and I would like to make a motion, but I'm not sure if there's further discussion needed on agenda item number 6B1.
He was waiting for more discussion. It's up to you, Mr. Dinar, if you want to make your motion. If not, I don't see anybody initiating more discussion, or I have one as well.
Okay. I would like to make a motion that the board make a finding to the effect that the board finds that the public health, safety, or welfare imperatively requires emergency action. And based on that finding, the board do a summary suspension of Dr. Goyle's general dentistry license.
McLean seconds.
And just to clarify, Mr. Dinar, are you saying for 32.1263.02, which would be falsely reporting to the board, a dentist? Oh, am I on the right one? Hold on.
1201.
Oh, thank you.
0.01.
Yes, thank you. 1201.01. Is that the statute that you're going off of?
I'm going off of 1263.02 subsection D.
Okay, yep, subsection D.
His motion is just based on a finding of emergency at this point.
Okay.
You will need to
clarify that.
If the motion passes, you will need to make interim findings of fact and interim conclusions of law in addition to that finding of emergency.
Okay. So any discussion on the motion and a second on the table? Okay, can we do a roll call, please?
Taylor?
Yes.
Hardy?
Aye.
Berg?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Harmon?
Aye.
Morrow?
Yes.
Dinar?
Yes.
Goodman?
Yes.
Hero?
Yes.
Okay, all in favor. Motion passes. Okay, so with the summary suspension, we will need the interim findings of fact. So that's our next step right now, is we need to have interim findings of fact that will then be presented at the hearing that will be within 30 days for Dr. Goyle.
Yes.
So
is that with a, this is Dr. Taylor, with a formal interview?
No.
Okay.
When the board summarily suspends, it moves directly to a formal hearing.
Good.
At the Office
right.
of Administrative Hearings.
Okay, good. Okay, thank you.
And I have a question. I have a question for the motions, a little bit for clarification, even though they've already gone through and passed, and then also for our legal counsel. With this motion, Mr. Dinar, were you also with the threat to the public seeking ultimately complete revocation? That's your end desire for your motion?
Yes, because that's the requirement of the statute.
Okay.
Ultimately, it's the revocation.
Okay. I just wanted that clarified on record so that we can proceed. Okay, so findings of fact. So I think I would like to have that on May 9th, 2014, that he had, okay,
it's
hold
May
on.
May 2nd.
Do you want these findings of fact to be in chronological order right now, or can we just throw them all out there and they can then be put in chronological order?
However the board wants to do it, just they will need to be part of your order. If it's easier to go chronologically, you can do that. If not, it's not a requirement. Okay. You may want to get on the record when it was Dr. Goyle did receive his 1301 permit, which I believe was in October of 2013. Sherry, is that sound? Do you know?
Yes.
That sounds correct.
Okay, so the first
in
thing...
In the diner, I kind of have a suggestion along those lines. So we have in our packet at page numbers, I think, 29 onward, the chronology of all the facts.
Yes.
It starts at page 29, and I think it goes on for a few pages until, I think, page 39. So could we direct staff to adopt those the facts as mentioned in those pages as the findings of fact of the board?
Are you, Mr. Diner, talking about something the staff prepared for you, a timeline?
Yes.
All right, and you also have a... Yes. You do have a report and summary from Dr. Palmer that addressed all the allegations and the information obtained in the investigation. Does the board have that?
Yes.
Yes, so that would be included as well.
Are there specific findings you want to focus on? The board has voted on a finding of emergency. You may want to articulate some facts that you are basing your decision on as to how you believe the public is imminently in danger.
I can add to that. He now has had his license reinstated because of we unsealed
lifted the order.
Yeah, lifted the order. So at this point, he could go practice dentistry. If we do not do this and do the emergency, he could go practice dentistry and possibly harm the public as of today. So I think that's in and of itself should be the major emergency that we foresee.
So specifically, and I agree with you, but specifically, what would be that would be harm to the public? And that's what Mary will be talking about.
And the harm to the public could be ethical decisions that he's already displayed, that he puts his own wants above that of our legislations, of our licensures. There's an ethical concern that could harm those who he would practice on.
I agree with his own words that the board's approval was just a formality. So again, I think he's non-regulatable. That to me shows that he is willing to go to any length to put in practice something that he feels that he has the right to do, even if he hasn't legally obtained the correct permit. He had the permit, but it wasn't legally obtained, so he put that in place. I feel that he could very well at any moment do sedations again. And I'm sure that he would say that he's not going to, but he also said that everything was obtained legally and he was practicing since 2013 with a fraudulent permit. So I think it's very scary for the public to think that they're going to go to a dentist that at any point, if somehow was requested, that he could sedate them again because he feels that he has enough knowledge and training. And he has stated again that our board approval, which means all the legalities that are associated with it, is just a formality.
I would add as harm to the public his conscious and intentional disregard of the applicable laws and regulations. And that's imminently harmful to the public because it undermines the public's confidence in the dental profession. And it undermines the board's authority to regulate the profession to protect the public health and safety.
Any more findings of fact?
Thank you.
Okay, so before you vote, just so we have, you're going to incorporate the findings from Dr. Palmer's report and summary.
Yes.
And those are summarized basically in a timeline.
Yes.
As to how Dr. Goyle presented false credentials to the board and obtained his permit and renewed his permit over the years based on those same credentials.
And that's on 29 to 39 on our, page 29 to 39 on our.
Okay. And Dr. Palmer's report is, I wrote the page number down. Page 540.
Okay.
Is Dr. Palmer's report and summary. It starts at 540.
So to be able to include both those 10 pages plus Dr. Palmer's report.
Is that the board?
I think that.
One. Yes.
Meg, along with the findings that have been articulated during the meeting.
Yes.
In pages 29 through 39, there is some interpretation or opinion. Can we redact that and just leave it as statements rather than?
Yeah, your findings need to be just objective and factual, not any kind of editorial comments, other than articulating the board's concerns. So I think the purpose of the timeline was mainly to summarize.
And it's a great, it does outline the timeline. There's just little parts that include editorial, or at least seem to.
Thank you. And are you also incorporating then, I think it's in the timeline, but you're incorporating Dr. Goyle's plea agreement and ultimate criminal convictions?
Yes.
As interim findings of fact?
Yes.
Yes, Mary, this is Harmon. I guess I'm just a little unclear. Just voted to approve a summary suspension.
Yes.
So when there's this formal hearing, they're not going to take the full case under consideration?
Yes, we will. But the process is that when the board summarily suspends, an order has to be issued to Dr. Goyle. It's an order of summary suspension, which needs to contain interim findings of fact, interim conclusions of law, where you believe if all this is proven, then the violations of your statute, you need to identify those. Then you have your finding of emergency included in that order, and then we issue that, and then that becomes the basis for the hearing. We'll turn that into a complaint and notice of hearing, and then we put that before the judge. But the entire case, yes.
We'll, okay, because, well, I mean, it's
depending
just,
on what we put in.
I'll go back to the same point, but when documentation is submitted to the board and attested by the applicant as being truthful, they take a polygraph test and pass the polygraph test with flying colors, saying that that information is truthful, and then admit later in court that it's not truthful. I want to make sure, you know, all these things are taken into consideration as if it's not hit as one of the bullet points that's going to be reviewed. You get my point?
I do. We'll have to, you know, as we proceed to hearing, determine what exhibits will be put in front of the judge. Generally, well, I mean, the entire file doesn't just
the whole,
get,
you know,
admitted.
And the basis of the summary suspension is an ethical breach that we feel, or personally, I feel, that puts the public in jeopardy.
Right. But which, you know, we want to make sure that you, the board, is articulating why you are taking this action at this point. And you can incorporate the findings from your investigative report and the findings from the timeline and the criminal convictions.
And the polygraph is in
that's fine. That like, as I well. Guess we've answered my question in 5 minutes instead of one. I'm sorry. But I just want to make certain that the whole body of the information is being considered, and not, since we're asking for specific facts, that they're not just just those individual facts being considered.
Right.
Yeah, if we miss one, that, you know, in our little list now, that it's not dismissed as part of.
And Dr. Harmon, if you want to make that an interim finding of fact, if you feel that that's an essential part of this.
I, for me, it certainly is.
Okay.
I would add, as a finding of fact, that a doctor putting his own self-interest above the welfare of patients would call for a suspension.
Any others? Okay, so now we vote.
You want to vote on the interim findings of fact?
Yes, please. We'll do a roll call, please.
You need a motion to
adopt them? Oh, I apologize. So I'll make a motion that we adopt the interim findings of fact.
Taylor, second.
I'm sorry. And any more discussion since we have a motion and a second before we vote? Okay, a roll call, please.
Taylor?
Yes.
Hardy?
Aye.
Berg?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Harmon?
Aye.
Morrow?
Yes.
Dinar?
Yes.
Goodman?
Yes.
Hero?
Yes.
All in favor. Motion carries. Okay, so now we'll need the interim conclusions of law. So, as I stated before, and Mr. Diner, I'm sure you are well more acquainted with this than I am, but I found for ARS 32.1201.016 and 32.1201.012.
And then do you want to add, because you've added the criminal convictions in 32.1263?
A2. Yes, A2. Okay. So the invoking the disciplinary action for the felony convictions of 32.1263A2.
And Ms. Hardy, just so we have the right unprofessional conduct, you have procuring or attempting to procure a certificate or of the board or a license to practice dentistry by fraud or misrepresentation. That's 6?
Yes.
Okay. And 12, knowingly making any false or fraudulent statement, written or oral, in connection with the practice of dentistry.
Correct.
All right. And then the 1263A2. Any others?
And I think there is a 1263 subsection D, because that lists the kind of things that constitute unethical.
Mr. Diner, those, the unethical conduct applies only to business entities. If you look at 1263C, okay. It's the equivalent of unprofessional conduct for a business entity.
Okay, got it.
Because, and we already have on record, of course, the finding of emergency.
You so have the finding of emergency.
Okay.
You voted on that. And based, and just to reiterate, based on the interim findings and the conclusions of law, the board is finding that there is an imminent danger to the public.
Correct. Okay, so I would make a motion that we, let me make sure with Mary that this is the correct next step, make a motion now with the interim conclusions of law with the three that we just listed.
Second, Goodman.
Any discussion? Can we have a roll call, please?
Taylor?
Yes.
Hardy?
Aye.
Berg?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Harmon?
Aye.
Morrow?
Yes.
Dinar?
Yes.
Goodman?
Yes.
Hero?
Yes.
All in favor. Motion carries.
And just, Ms. Hardy, just to tie it all in together, a motion to summarily suspend. I know it was part in the beginning, but if you could do one final one.
Okay. So this is Hardy. I make a motion that we do a summary suspension.
Goodman,
for Dr.
second.
Boyle. Do you need me to read the code on that? Okay. Any discussion? And roll call, please.
Taylor?
Yes.
Hardy?
Aye.
Berg?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Harmon?
Aye.
Morrow?
Yes.
Dinar?
Yes.
Goodman?
Yes.
Hero?
Yes.
All in favor. Motion carries. Okay. All right, let's go back to number 3, hiring outside counsel to represent the board.
This is Goodman. I move that we don't hire outside counsel to represent the board.
Taylor, second.
We go ahead, Dr. Taylor. Sorry for stepping on your toes there.
Any discussion? We have a roll call, please. Taylor?
Yes.
Hardy?
Aye.
Berg?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Herman?
Aye.
Morrow?
Yes.
Dinar?
Yes.
Goodman?
Yes.
Hero?
Yes.
All in favor. Motion carries. Okay, agenda item number 7, review of board meeting process. So the board.
Can I have 1 minute break? Do you mind?
Yes. No, a minute break?
To walk.
No problem. We're going to take a 1 minute recess. Back into the open meeting. So now we are on number 7, review of board meeting process. So the board to review the current process of the 2 call to the publics and may take action to amend the process to allow for complainants to address the board during their specific agenda item. Ryan, would you like to discuss on this?
Yeah, so this was on the agenda in June. And because this meeting wasn't going to be super crowded with material, we put it on this one. I think we even agreed to it at the June meeting.
Yes.
If there was a special meeting. So, and I know, I think...
Before he goes on, can I just say that I'm having a really hard time understanding him?
Sure.
My mom says that all the time.
Can you get closer to that mic?
We'll have him speak up for you.
It's the tenor of my voice. This is on here basically to review, and I know there was a process that you guys used to allow this, and then you went through some, and I wasn't a part of the change, and so now I think I'm asking you to go back to what you at one point did. And I think there's so much change in the board, I'm not sure that the old regime, other than Dr. Taylor, would remember, and I'm not calling you old, Dr. Taylor.
Well, he and I came on about the same time, and I don't remember the old way. I only remember how it's been now, where the public or where the complainant gets up in the beginning. I never witnessed that they talked during their specific case. Did you?
Yeah, they did.
You remember
just for
that?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
Before you came.
Right before I came.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think what it would do is help. One, it would help the complainant want to feel heard. Second, to that, it also allows you guys to stay current on the case and who was the complainant, because if you have 6 complainants shuffle up at the beginning of the meeting at 8 o'clock in the morning, but they don't hear the case until, or they being the board, you don't hear the case till 2 p.m., it's hard to go back and recall what they stated. And I think that when you call an agenda, and a lot of boards operate this way, I think Mary can attest to that, that they at the, when the that agenda item is called, they do allow the complainant to come up and speak. Sometimes there's dialogue back, sometimes there isn't. I think that allowing too much dialogue, you could get into like a testy situation. But at least I feel heard. In fact, and I think my point is a little bit more relevant in the fact that just this week I received a complaint from the Ombudsman's office with a complainant that came before the board that feels like he never was rightfully heard. And I think if we allow these people to speak, perception's reality, right? And I think even if you're not, nobody's going to be happy at the end of cases. There's somebody that's going to be upset. Either it's the respondent or it's the complainant. And sometimes it's both, determined based on the outcome. But I think we should allow these people to be heard regardless of how the case is going to be finally adjudicated.
And this is Taylor. And how many minutes are you going to give them? You know, because they could go on forever.
I would still be okay with the same amount, 3 minutes.
Yeah, I think limiting them is still... I think it's up to you always to limit. And even at the call to the public, at the general call to the public, just because somebody's here for the call to the public, you never have to grant them an opportunity to speak. You have to have a call to the public, but they, you don't have to allow them to speak.
Ryan, in this, would we then be more beholden to attendance at certain times? Right now, if we say this is on the hearings at 9 a.m., we get ready for it at 8:45, they're not here, we wait till 9. Would this now make it so we have more defined spots on the agenda that this case has to be heard at 10 a.m. because that's when the complainant's going to attend?
Right, exactly.
So does it hold us to, it puts us two parties that we have to hold on to for the schedule, right?
No, because if the complainant is here, they can be heard. If they're not.
Oh, okay.
So we would not
change to start saying at 10 a.m. we're going to hear these cases.
Right, they're not a party to the complaint. The parties are the board and the respondent. Thanks. So they're just a witness. So, yeah.
And the only thing that I foresee, and I actually am a proponent for this, I like the idea of it for the reason of I agree that I think that the public is very confused on our meeting, and especially when we don't pull something as a board that we want to discuss anymore and we accept the IRC's recommendation and they've spoken and all of a sudden they don't hear anything about their case. They are so confused over what just happened and they don't understand.
They don't feel like
they don't understand the process of it.
They don't feel like they've been heard. Given their day in court,
right.
So to speak.
Yeah. So the only thing that I foresee changing is then it would be that we would not lump together as many of those interim or those consent agreements, that it would be something that we would do more if they were here, that it would be right then and there, that it would be let them talk and then adjudicated instead of lumping so many together. So, but that's, again, I'm for that, actually.
And I'll just be devil's advocate for my own proposal. Somebody else brought this up, and I don't even know if they're in attendance today, but a lot of the times the complainants were told to come in the morning and because they want the rest of their day. They don't want to spend the whole day here. Mm-hmm. As the devil's advocate in this, they would literally have to be here till 2, potentially. So, if they want to be heard. So, and I'm just pointing that out because somebody brought that up, and I'm not even sure they're present today.
Could we give an opportunity at the beginning of anybody who wants to speak at the beginning, or you have an opportunity to speak right before your case?
Yeah, so the current call to the public, like just the general call to the public, they can even come forward and say, hi, I'm a complainant for case number whatever, and I'm here today just to address the board. When it comes up on the agenda, I'd like to speak later or something. And as board, we can make these instructions as part of our complaint process or something. So, yeah, so they can essentially speak twice.
And it could be also that the complainant is informed that we don't know how long other case proceedings could be, so they may end up sitting here. So for them to hopefully not get frustrated
I think we've been pretty amenable to bouncing around the agenda.
Oh, yes,
when we know
exactly.
When people are waiting.
Especially because, right.
But it's just one thing just to have on the record is that I agree. I think it would help the public, their perception of being heard. But just like the spiel is given to them before they speak, it's not to review the whole case, and that's typically what happens,
yes.
Is they read their whole case all over again, and we've spent countless hours already reviewing every document that we've been sent. We know it backwards and forwards, but they don't know that.
Right.
You know, and I get that part, but it's not gonna fix that problem, but it will maybe fix the problem that we give them an immediate decision.
And we can tailor the letter when we notice them of the meeting. The impending meeting that's coming, we could tailor the letter to basically state this won't be an opportunity to restate all the facts, but come prepared to just maybe read a quick statement or something like that if they want to come. So we'll say they'll be limited to 3 minutes, which is what you currently use.
Yes.
Yeah, may I suggest that we give them an option at the beginning to speak or right in front of their case, not both.
I agree.
Oh, yeah, because we don't want them to jump in both times.
I agree.
Is, you know, only so much time that we can give to each case.
Right.
The only thing you'd have to just mention is change your verbiage for case number, yada, yada, yada. Is there any a member of the public who'd like to speak before?
Well, it'll be on their sign-in.
Right. Yeah.
So it will be listed here on the sign-in when I'll know that so-and-so, and it has their name, so their initials, if they're the complainant, is in the audience. Did you want to speak before your case is heard?
Yeah.
So when we're on agenda item number, whatever, so and so has.
And you'll know it on the
we'll
thing.
Know it
yeah,
on
okay,
here.
Good.
So
yeah, good.
And like Mr. Goodman said, be able to give them an opportunity at the beginning if you'd like to speak now
and
or
not
speak.
Wait here while we're reviewing other cases, or
would you like to speak directly before our case?
Or the person, so the person that shows up 2 hours after we start, but an hour before their case comes up. now has a voice versus being missing.
The only caveat is then they have to be sworn in again.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And which is not a big deal. We can always swear them in very quickly.
Yes.
But we just have to make sure that they are.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Do we need a motion for this?
So, yes, that would we need a motion for this?
Yes, because the reason that's before you is the last time the board voted to make it the way it is now. So you need to unwind that and put it back to the way it used to be.
Okay, so I would make a motion that we amend the process to allow for the claimants to address the board during their specific agenda item. Specifically, I would say that we would amend it that we will give them the option that they can talk at the call to the public if they don't want to wait for their agenda item, or they will have a chance before their agenda item.
Taylor second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay. And then we have the current events.
Nice job waiting for the delay on that. That was well done.
Well, let me get back to the agenda. Sorry.
Future agenda items.
Okay. So any summary of current events? Anything for you, Ryan? Okay. Then yes. Any future meeting agendas? Number 9.
Yeah, when are we going to hear from the illustrious Mary in our doing things?
For training.
Oh, training.
Is that for the next agenda? Is that on the agenda for next August?
That's up to you. I mean, we're planning on doing that, but Mary and I talked also about having just a special meeting just to cover that one topic. Because
I wouldn't mind doing that.
I like that, too.
People get exhausted going through the whole agenda. And then
you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And let's do that.
At that point, can we do it remote where it's done on like a webinar type thing?
If Ryan can figure that out.
Just a question. That
I would not
be
able to.
What's the appropriate length?
I mean, you
for
would
that?
Still have to do a open meeting.
Yes.
If some of you want to.
Yeah, come here versus
video,
some stay home and video conference.
We can do it as staff because it would be a meeting. We would be in a room like this.
Be here.
Yeah, and then. And Mary could even, she wouldn't have to be here, she could, but then everybody else could be wherever you are.
Do we need to make a motion to move staff to do that, or can we just move staff?
Yeah, just direct that it
can
be
direct
on.
Staff that we could set up a time to do that.
Yeah.
Because Mary has spent I've heard her talk about these things, and they're good.
Yes.
Really help us out.
And they're needed.
Yeah. Especially with all the newbies.
So we'll send out like a cursory email just to find out dates and times that people can. Are Fridays generally the better dates for everybody?
It doesn't matter.
I'm retired. I can do anytime I want.
Tuesday at 4 a.m. would be ideal for me.
We got it.
All right. Any motion to adjourn then?
Taylor moves that we adjourn this meeting.
Goodman second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Thank you, Mr.
Aye.
Dinar, and thank you, Marilyn. You guys take care.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. You too.